There's one thing in the Brett Kavanaugh hearings that we at The Takeaway keep thinking about.
My friends and I, boys and girls, yes, we drank beer. I liked beer, still like beer. Sometimes probably had too many beers, and sometimes other people had too many beers. We liked beer.
During last week's Senate hearings, the Supreme Court nominee ducked and dodged questions about his drinking habits. Some of the details that emerged from the hearings of parties and kegs and drinking to the point of blacking out, they're familiar to many of us. Either we've been there or we know people who've been there. And we're surrounded by mostly positive messages about alcohol everywhere we go. It's in our music.
Drinking again.
And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad.
What's your name? Let me talk to you. Let me buy you a drink.
And it's in our movies and TV.
You're gonna bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up.
Shaken, not stirred.
Is there alcohol in this?
Why do you want a little bit? Because if you're gonna drink, I'd rather you do it in the house.
And I am just 3 days away from the biggest drinking binge in history.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
So let's be honest, America. Do we have a drinking problem?
Hi, this is Joseph from Worcester, originally from Cannes, France. The U.S. drinking is a little out of control. I grew up in France, and wine and beer were childhood beverages. When I moved back to New England to go to high school, drinking was a big thing. I had already been to nightclubs. It was not a big deal for me to drink. Beer and wine are not really considered alcoholic beverages for minors in Europe. They should consider that here.
Hi, I'm Ursula from St. Louis. I think casual drinking culture is so pervasive, especially here where I live. I do drink, but not very often, and it seems like there are so few social outlets that don't involve alcohol. It makes it hard to abstain when one needs to or wants to.
Hi, I'm Nicholas from Westfield, Massachusetts. Education about appropriate alcohol consumption is largely a family responsibility. There is a responsible way to consume alcohol. People do need to be taught, not necessarily in school, but certainly they need to be encouraged by family to learn what to do and how to be responsible.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Today, alcohol in America. Christina Mayer is an assistant professor at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health, and Gabrielle Glazer is the author of Her Best Kept Secret, Why Women Drink and How They Can Regain Control. And Gabrielle says to understand modern party culture, we have to go back quite a bit.
Prohibition spawned a culture of binge drinking. There were booze cruises off the shores of every coastal state. People socialized, for the first time, men and women socialized together in speakeasies. And the point of drinking during Prohibition was to drink as much as you possibly could because you might be raided by the feds. So actually, ironically, Prohibition spawned a culture of binge drinking that has persisted for 100 years.
Christina, when we look at this from a public health perspective, most of us, when we get our annual physicals, our doctors will ask us, how often do you drink? How much do you drink? For researchers, how do you look at how Americans drink?
That's a great question. So we look at several different pieces. The first is actually just frequency of drinking and who is a drinker or is not a drinker. So we know that about 70% of American adults are past year drinkers. So the majority of Americans do drink. The next question would be sort of how frequently do you drink? Do you drink once a week or every single day, only on weekends? And then finally, there's the question of heavy drinking. So you've already referred to binge drinking, which is defined as 4 or more drinks for a woman and 5 or more drinks per man in a given drinking episode in a given day. And that sort of is the gold standard for what we consider to be heavy drinking or binge drinking. But we also do know that many Americans typically only consume one drink, sometimes two drinks. And there are increased risks for people drinking if you typically only have one drink and you consume 3 drinks on one given occasion. So this sort of magic number of binge drinking works at some sort of a population average, which is what we look at in public health. But there are risks associated with lower levels of drinking potentially as well.
Who is drinking the most, Christina? Do we have a sense of who is consuming the most alcohol in the United States, particularly when it comes to heavy drinking?
Yes, unsurprisingly, it's those under age 25 in the United States. So college-aged populations, those in college but also, you know, non-college attending young adults drink the most. Although rates don't decline that much, we see a lot of people in the age range of 45 to 65. There are a lot of alcohol consumers, although probably only about 15 to 20% of those in that 45 to 65-year-old age range are binge drinkers or heavy episodic drinkers with any sort of frequency. The heavy and binge drinking we often see in college-age populations.
Gabrielle, I'm wondering, this was something that we were thinking about in terms of culture, in American culture. We know, as we all just said here, college students have a proclivity for binge drinking, frat parties on college campuses. What role does gender play in all of this?
We know today on college campuses, the numbers of men and women are roughly equal in terms of actual numbers, physical numbers. But activities remain defined by male culture. Fraternity parties, football games, tailgate parties, pre-gaming, drinking to get drunk has become something that drinking researchers have studied since the 1980s. There are surveys that started taking place in the early 1980s, and they lasted for about 20 years, I think up till 2002. College students were actually reporting, oh, I'm drinking on an empty stomach, and more women were doing this than men. I'm drinking shots. I'm doing this intentionally. I want to get drunk. This is my object. It's not to socialize and have a good time and just hang out and have a couple of drinks with my friends. It's literally the object is to get obliterated.
I'd be curious, Christina, also, if you saw the hearing and you saw the exchanges between Brett Kavanaugh and the senators who were questioning him. When this issue came up, what was your reaction to Kavanaugh's sort of defense of his drinking or defense of the questioning?
Yeah, so we know that people with more sort of socioeconomic and other resources are sort of able to experience higher levels of binge drinking and experience fewer consequences and sort of see more of the positive attributes of drinking. And so, you know, quite frankly, it didn't surprise me that this is how he portrayed his drinking experiences. Many Americans, you know, many people look back fondly on their college years and their high school years of heavy binge drinking, heavy episodic drinking, without sort of realizing that there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans who are not so lucky and cannot sort of drink at those levels and continue, you know, they end up developing either alcohol use disorders or experience, you know, legal social consequences that are really important. So both from my own experience, you know, as someone who went to high school and college, as well as what I've seen from the research, it didn't surprise me that someone with Kavanaugh's social stature sort of sees drinking and understands drinking in the way that he does.
Yeah. And I think about President Trump, who recently, you know, drove the point home that he does not drink at all. And there are reasons why the president doesn't drink. He's had alcoholism in his own family. What about the 30-some-odd percent of Americans who don't drink, Christina? I'm curious, what do you do if you're one of those people who doesn't want to drink, doesn't choose to drink? Are you disconnected from the social contract, from the social fabric if you don't? I found it quite difficult if, you know, not drinking and then trying to engage socially.
You know, that's not an area of research that I study myself, but from what I've observed in talking to people who are non-drinkers, absolutely, you know, for example, even thinking about, you know, workplaces that I've been a part of in the past, happy hour, going out for drinks with friends afterwards is also a place where sort of business deals are done or work gets done as well. It's an important sort of form of socialization. And I think that some non-drinkers are quite comfortable around people who are consuming alcohol, but it's very difficult for some people, particularly those who have potentially had an alcohol use disorder in their own past. The context and being in an environment like a bar environment can be a difficult thing to do. So I think there is a lot of, you know, in American culture, a lot of this is built around, you know, drinking environments and drinking expectations. And one thing we do know is that when you drink and when you go out to these contexts, you know, if you're drinking in a bar with friends, you tend to really drink to the level of those around you. So we know even sort of amongst drinkers that there's this sort of social contagion, this effect that if I typically have one drink, but I'm going out to happy hour with colleagues and we, you know, my friends are, or my coworkers are consuming 2 to 3 drinks, I probably will drink more than I would otherwise. So I think that, you know, non-drinkers also feel that social contagion, that sort of influence of drinking. And I imagine that's quite difficult.
So do we have a problem, Gabrielle?
Oh, I believe we do. 88,000 people, according to the CDC, die every year from alcohol overuse. Cirrhosis deaths between 2000 and 2015, after having declined for 3 decades straight, rose 21% in men aged 45 and 64, and alarmingly 57% among women.
Wow. Christina, do we have a problem?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, you look at deaths and that there are more alcohol attributable deaths than, you know, any, related to any other substance. And it's one of sort of the leading causes of preventable death in this country. And, you know, beyond just looking at mortality, the morbidity, the impact on our society is just massive. Everything from, you know, physiological problems, feeling hungover, not being able to go to work the next day, to social consequences, feeling shame, getting in trouble in the workplace, legal problems, as well as, of course, so this is in the media today, and we're talking about, you know, sexual assaults, sexual violence, there are, you know, intimate partner violence. Some of my research focuses on the link between IPV and alcohol. So I think if we take sort of take a broader look at the impacts of alcohol in the United States and worldwide, it's sort of, you know, it's, there's no way you could say that we do not have a problem with alcohol.
And from each of you, any thoughts on how we can get better?
I think we need to look at countries in which and cultures in which moderation is really modeled very, very well. We don't have a culture of moderation in this country for anything.
Christina?
So a lot of my research focuses on sort of what I call environmental prevention. So it's thinking about how we can actually change the contexts in which we drink. And these are, you know, the social contexts as well as some physical aspects of the places where people drink. So I think if we think about prevention and as well as secondary prevention, so prevention of heavy drinking in the first place, as well as sort of prevention of these consequences related to alcohol, so we don't sort of put all the pressure just on the individual that, you know, you're responsible for your own drinking and you need to go seek treatment and help if you have a problem with drinking. I think that we can sort of think of it in a broader context and try to think what we can do as a culture and as a country to prevent these problems in the first place. And I think there are a number of avenues that we could potentially explore to help reduce alcohol problems at a population level.
Gabrielle Glazer is the author of Her Best Kept Secret, Why Women Drink and How They Can Regain Control. And Christina Mayer is the Assistant Professor of Behavior and Community Health Sciences at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Christy calling from Tyler, Texas, and I guess I'd just love to see the use of alcohol framed in a more honest way. It won't make you beautiful, sexy, popular, or rich. It isn't the devil, but it can sure cause a lot of heartache and pain.